Okay, you're listening to 93.7 San Francisco Liberation Radio, and we have on the phone with us David Williams of Global Emergency Alert Response, who's going to be telling us about the Oceans Conference that's coming up in Bray on, next week, is it, David?
Yes, this is the convention, the National Oceans Conference, that the White House is convening at the Naval Graduate School there in Monterey, starting a week from today, 11th and 12th of June. There'll be like 600 people, 100 from the White House, and 500 scientists and industry people addressing the health of the oceans. My concern has to do with the primary ocean issue, which is the health of the phytoplankton in the oceans. And this is due, my concern is due to a prediction that was made by eminent climatologists 10 years ago. People like Adam Trombley with Project Earth, which he started with Buckminster Fuller, where they predicted, and all their predictions, according to him, when I talked to him last year, over these last 10 years, had come true on target. And what he said then was that the ozone depletion is threatening the life of the phytoplankton in the oceans. These are the one-celled plants that produce over half of our oxygen and that are the beginning of the oceanic food chain. And the problem is that if we don't straighten this problem out this year, he said, that 10 years from now, you know, like now, we'll be going through a point of no return, and 10 years from now, the extra radiation coming through the ozone layer will destroy all the phytoplankton in the ocean. So this is a real critical problem, and this year, 1998, is a real critical year, according to these predictions. Of course, the ozone depletion, everybody knows, is influenced by the pollution in the air, from the halogenated hydrocarbons and chlorine gas from water purification and things like that. But what most people don't think about, and Trombley pointed out quite eloquently, and it makes sense if you just think about it, the other and the main source of the ozone depletion has to do with the reduction in the oxygen amount in the atmosphere due to the combined effect of fossil fuel combustion of oxygen and the deforestation of so many trees that produce oxygen. So there's actually less oxygen in the atmosphere now, therefore less oxygen in the upper atmosphere for ozone to be made from. Of course, ozone itself is a triatomic oxygen molecule made from sunlight acting on regular diatomic oxygen molecules. So as the oxygen level decreases, so does the ozone level. And this, of course, is compounded by these pollutions up in the air. So what we need to do is to figure out some sort of a plan, implementation of some kind of solutions to not only slow down the pollutions that are influencing the ozone layer, but we also have to reoxygenate the atmosphere rapidly in order to avert this environmental crisis, this oxygen crisis.
Now, this conference that's coming up is a UN conference, is that correct?
Well, it's being convened this year at the request of Congressman Sam Farr, because this is the International Year of the Oceans, designated by the United Nations. The White House itself responded to Congressman Farr's call for such a conference, and so this will be a United States National Oceans Conference, where they'll be addressing many issues, coastal issues, fishing issues, and this kind of thing. We've submitted information to the White House on this matter that I just discussed, and I'm confident that at some level this ozone depletion will be discussed. I'm not sure at what level. So this is the reason that we're doing a vigil in the Monterey Bay Park, blocks away from where the summit's going to be taking place. This is a nice park right on the ocean at the bottom of Monterey Bay. And we'll be doing a vigil there from the 11th through the 14th to support the Ocean Summit. And be a prayer vigil, but we'll also be having signs that people can carry and kind of stand by the entrance of the summit as the people go in and out on the 11th and the 12th. They can see this sort of critical issue. The theme we're doing for the vigil is stop global warming and save the phytoplankton from the ozone depletion with the free energy technologies and hemp for victory. This is the concept being that to reduce the oxygen consumed by fossil fuels, we need to move into this new area of energy technologies to replace not only fossil fuel, but nuclear power as well, This is a new area of technologies many people know generically as free energy technologies, and what the Department of Energy is now referring to as zero-point energy technologies, named after this zero-point energy field that they've now proven exists in the void of empty space. That is to say, in the space in which matter resides, there's this enormous, almost unlimited energy field that up until now, until last year, the technical theoretical papers, the DOE was not even convinced was real. And at the same time, over the last 20 years, there's a number of experimenters that have gotten devices together that harness this field and produce usable energy from it, like electricity or heat. This is a part of the phenomena.
You mean researchers have actually tapped into this?
Yes. My first exposure to it was in 1979 when I lived in Santa Barbara, and among the people that came to investigate one of these devices was a team of researchers from the Department of Energy. This particular device was called the N machine, and it was invented by a former Polaroid senior scientist and MIT teacher of electrical engineering named Bruce De Palma. He's passed away in New Zealand last year, but his work has inspired a replication of these experiments in Japan and India and many places around the world, as well as many, many other devices that tap into this energy field, apparently. The problem is that we've had dozens and dozens of different devices and different experimenters who have shown anomalous results. That is to say, they get through their particular gizmo, they get more energy through electricity out of it than it takes to run the device itself. And up until now, nobody's been able to clearly explain in terms of theoretical physics, where this energy comes from. The mainstream scientists have been saying, oh, you must have done the experiment wrong. It can't be true. It violates the laws of thermodynamics. And so, therefore, we don't even want to look at it.
Has there been any discussion of this in the media? Because I haven't heard anything about it.
Not lately. There have been newspaper articles, local ones, in the towns where these devices have been made. And there's also been some national publicity. One of the inventors in Mississippi named Joe Newman has been fighting the U.S. Patent Office for 10 or 15 years to get a patent on his device, but they won't give it to him because they think it violates laws of physics or something like that. But what's happened is that just in the last year or so, a prominent theoretical physicist, a fellow that used to be at the Stanford Research Institute named Dr. Harold Puthoff, who's now with the Institute for Advanced Studies in Austin, Texas, he published an article in the Physical Review with a scientist from IBM going carefully through a theory and finally pointing out their analysis that shows that a device that would tap into this zero-point energy field would not violate laws of thermodynamics. So finally, at least in the front office, the Department of Energy is paying attention to this, and they're preparing to allocate, as a result of the input of this information this year, that we did to the new National Energy Policy Plan, what's called Comprehensive National Energy Strategy, that was released in April. This is in a response to the Kyoto Convention on Climate Control last December to try to figure out how to reduce carbon dioxide emissions from the energy industry to address global warming. So the Department of Energy is now preparing to allocate $500,000 maybe the first year, $1 million the next year, to look into these different devices and see if some of them that we've seen so many years actually can be fit this pigeonhole of, as they define it, the zero-point energy field kind of extraction device.
Now, is this another one of those cases where, we always hear about the corporations like the oil companies coming across inventions like this and suppressing them and buying up the patents and so forth? Is this another case like that?
A similar case, but this is even more radical because we're not just talking about a better carburetor or something like that. We're talking about a kind of technology where what's in the future is not only vehicles that don't need fuel that run on this zero-point energy field, but some of the experiments also point to an understanding between not only electricity and magnetism, but gravity and inertia. So as was reported in 1992 by Richard Hoagland to the United Nations, we're on the verge of technologies for power plants for cars or so forth that don't even need to touch the ground, so-called anti-gravity or electrogravitic devices. This is a little farther down the line than these zero-point energy electric generators, But what we've found, we have a lot of evidence that shows that over this same period of time, since the early 80s, the government, through the Department of Defense and other agencies, are using this technology for military purposes like submarine and ship propulsion. There's a satellite weapon in orbit that was photographed by whose action was photographed by a space shuttle a few years ago that uses this power plant and a railgun device to try to shoot down, you know, whatever they want to shoot down. And so what we're finding is that the government now may be loosening up its secrecy requirements, restrictions on this technology. We know from one of the popular books that came out recently on this called The Coming Energy Revolution by Gene Manning. According to this information they've gotten published in that book under the Freedom of Information Act.
Is that the same Gene Manning that co-authored with Nick Begich about HARP?
Yeah, it's the book called Angels Don't Play That.
Angels Play This HARP, yeah.
HARP, yeah. This is the same Jean Manning. She's a journalist that lives in Canada, and she spent quite a few years researching this kind of all these different inventors and these technologies. She's on the board of directors of a couple of new energy, associations that have annual conventions researching this. And as the program goes by here in the next few minutes, if people get a pencil, I'll start giving websites and names of books that they can check into to research this more thoroughly. But the deal is that right now, according to one of the authors of another book in this field, besides Gene Manning's book called The Coming Energy Revolution, there's another book out by Dr. Brian O'Leary, who wrote the foreword in Gene's book. His book is called Miracle in the Void. And Brian used to be not only a NASA scientist, astronaut, physics teacher, but he was the former science and energy policy advisor to four different presidential candidates. So as a hard-line scientist, he finally investigated all this and traveled around the world interviewing different inventors, found out that it was real, and he wrote this book. His position is that we need a crash program like a Manhattan Project or an Apollo Project funded on the order of $100 million a year, which isn't much by energy industry standards, but he feels with that amount of money, in a very rapid period of time, we could get to the bottom of all these different experiments and implement these new technologies. Which, of course, if they were done too rapidly, would, you know, throw the economy into it, as we're talking about replacing all of the oil and nuclear energy industry that we've got. And so it has to be done in a careful way. But at the same time, we're faced with this environmental crisis, not only the global warming, which we see in all these new storms and huge hurricanes and tornadoes and all the weather changes that are coming upon us, global warming from too much carbon dioxide in the air. But the flip side of that, as I mentioned before, is burning up the oxygen and cutting down so many trees that produce oxygen. You can look at it right now and see that we're in a critical juncture because even the rainforests are burning. The droughts from this global warming effect are having wildfires in the rainforests where they don't supposed to be. You know, they never have wildfires in the rainforest. So that's how dry the earth is getting. We've got fires going all over the continents, and some of them going since last year, destroying even more trees and reducing our capability to reoxygenate the atmosphere.
One of the more frightening things in the news recently was this heat wave they've had in India that's killed over 1,000 people with temperatures up to around 123 degrees Fahrenheit. So definitely seems like the earth is changing.
Yeah, and you know, the other side of this, as far as the solutions to this problem, has to do with the hemp issue. Now, you know, the Department of Agriculture has maintained since the early 30s that, for example, an acre of hemp can produce four times more paper than an acre of trees. What this means is that this is a bioefficient plant, the most bioefficient plant, where if it produces four times more biomass per acre, that means it's consuming four times more carbon dioxide and putting out four times more oxygen than other plants per acre.
And it means instead of cutting down forests, we could just be growing hemp.
That's right. So what I'm pushing for is a National Hemp Reform Act that we need to implement, like, immediately. We need to start this growing season all over the world growing hemp to save the atmosphere, not just to legalize it for all the good purposes that it has, but we need a crash program where we have all the militaries and all the volunteers of all the governments all around the world planting hemp all over the place where it's possible to grow it, just so we can see the atmosphere. The reason that it'll work is hemp has so many economic uses and values to it that it'll be an incentive for people to grow it. And of course, the first thing that'll happen is we won't have to cut down so many of the big trees that do the finest job, the older trees, of reoxygenating the air. We'll be able to save the trees by growing hemp. But at the same time, all the areas where the trees have been cut or wherever we can, if we massively grow hemp, we might be able to turn this around. And this is the critical year. So we need to get the public awareness up and implement these free energy technologies with a National Free Energy Act, and also quit fiddling around with this hemp issue and re-legalize it, hemp, let's face it, hemp was made illegal in 1937 by a fraud perpetrated on the United States Congress and the United States population by simply calling it marijuana, like a derogatory term, like many other ethnic and racial kind of slur words that they used to foment public hysteria and outlaw this most valuable plant. So we've got to overcome this fraud. And either people, they don't know the truth, they're either this fraud or they're unknowingly perpetrating it. If they know the truth, then they're a part of perpetrating this fraud. You know, like the United Nations this year just came out with a new worldwide drug policy a few months ago, and hemp marijuana was not even mentioned in it. When they asked why, they said on the internet, you know, the United Nations feels like all the governments of the world are on the verge of legalizing it anyway, so they're not going to bother putting it into their drug policy for the worldwide. So apparently Gingrich is responding by trying to put a law through right now to eradicate the plant from the whole planet. So it's, people have been too timid on this hemp issue. They're thinking, oh, you know, we need it for this and that, but we have to realize this plant may be the only thing, because of its bioefficiency, that can save the atmosphere and rejuvenate the ozone layer and ameliorate global warming. The combined effect of replacing fossil fuel power with these new energy technologies, which are, let's face it, still at least a few years away from getting off the assembly line, maybe less depending on how quick they get on the devices that are already working.
Well, of course, the Clinton administration is fighting a so-called war on drugs, and of course here in California they're trying to undermine Proposition 215, even though the people voted for it. Do you have any indication at all that the Clinton administration would be positive towards this hemp proposal?
Well, my feeling is not only the Clinton administration, but every single member of Congress would switch sides immediately on this issue as soon as they see that 51% of the national electorate is in favor of re-legalizing hemp. Until they see that, and then they see that they're not going to get elected if they don't back it, they're going to keep fighting it the way they have. Maybe because they don't know any better, but more likely because they're scared they won't get re-elected because they think the public wants to keep this plant illegal. This year is a congressional election year, and in November, now we only have 2 or 3 months this summer to make this issue a national mainstream issue. Because as we get to within a month or so before the election, they're locked into the issues they're going to argue about. So we need people walking in the streets with hemp for victory signs and save the atmosphere with free energy and hemp for victory, this kind of stuff, all summer to foment the public awareness necessary around the country so that by the time we approach the election, this issue has to be argued about, and maybe even sooner. You know, that's my hope at the Ocean Summit, because there's going to be international media coming from all over the place to cover this critical issue. Wherever the president and vice president travel, they're there to cover it. But what I'm calling for is whoever can hear this program and has the time to alert their friends and so forth to come and show up in Monterey a week from today on the 11th of June. Come to the vigil, take part there at Monterey Bay Park, the bottom of the bay in Monterey, and pick up a sign or help with the streets and hand out literature so we can garner the public attention of the media to carry this issue out. I'm really kind of afraid that they're not going to discuss the direness of these kind of predictions, that let alone these solutions at this conference. But because the media will be there, if the public turns out, we're holding signs up in front of the gates where they all go in and out, at least it'll draw to their attention. And then the national media that comes to cover side stories, they'll pick this issue up too.
Now, of course, we have a vice president now who's supposed to be the environmental vice president. Has Gore, at least, given any kind of indication of being aware of this phytoplankton issue?
Well, I don't see how they could be, unaware of it, because within a couple of years after these predictions I mentioned from Adam Trombley, we started seeing articles in the newspaper, back in 1991, of scientists with the some official institute of limnology and oceanography was saying that already by then, in areas where the ozone layer had been damaged, phytoplankton growth had been retarded up to 20% in some areas. So, I mean, they've got to be addressing this, but they're all so afraid and timid of industry that, especially the energy industry, as far as reducing carbon dioxide emissions, and nobody's even talking about the flip side of global warming, which is the consumption of oxygen that reduces the ozone layer. But I do think that Al Gore, among all the politicians, from seeing him on Peter Jennings for an hour on global warming on the national news a few Saturdays ago, I know he's committed to this issue. And if, like everybody else in the world of politics, they need the public support before they can take a stand. But Gore and Clinton and none of the politicians are going to take a strong stand on these issues and these solutions that I've mentioned until they're convinced that if they do, they're going to get reelected. That means it's our job, the communications industry kind of people, to get the word out to the public about these things. Otherwise, they have to keep going the way they go. Otherwise, they won't be in a position to do any good by not getting elected.
So what you're hoping to do is that this prayer vigil will have a strong showing and send a strong signal to the leaders that the people are very serious about this.
Yes. And I think we can do it, and especially capture all this information in more detail through the media by ending the vigil on Flag Day, which is Sunday, the 14th of June. At noon, we're going to have an official American flag retirement ceremony, which is where we burn the American flag according to the U.S. flag code when it wears out. And in this, because there's a flag-burning, desecration constitution amendment in progress, and this is a volatile issue with the media and with the public, we're hoping to do this ceremony by way of an example to revive this as a community ceremony all over the United States, wherever a flag wears out, get this formal ceremony together and give people a chance in that venue to talk about different ideas like this for the future of America and the future of the world in a respectful manner. I think that on the 14th will be our main event, after the Ocean Summit's over and we've had 3 days to lobby the media and get their attention, as I've already sent out releases today, that by that time the 14th of June comes by, hopefully this issue of stop global warming, save the phytoplankton from the ozone depletion with free energy, zero-point technologies, and hemp victory will be a mainstream thing in all the media around the country. My most optimistic hope that we can foment enough public awareness on this in the next couple of months to where the president will sign a bill that Congress passes through, and then we'll start growing hemp all over the place, and we'll start having this free energy technology moving quickly to fruition.
Now, the dates, once again, are June 11th through the 14th.
Right.
Now, give us directions on how to get down there. If people are coming down from San Francisco, like what exit would they get off?
Well, you get off, you just go into Monterey, and you find the signs all over the place that direct you to the visitor center, and it's a lake. If you look on the map, Monterey Bay is like a horseshoe facing to the north. Right in the middle of that horseshoe on the bottom, on the beach, is Monterey Bay Park, locally known as Window on the Bay. Right across that main street from a little lake with the visitor's center. That's where we'll be centering the vigil. The Ocean Conference itself happens the 11th and the 12th. It's close to the public. We'll be carrying signs and lobbying that way. And then the community of Monterey is Ocean's Fair with a lot of events around town that Friday, the 12th, starting at noon until 8 in the evening, and some events, I think, on Saturday. Saturday will be our main day to regroup, get it together in the park, plan the ceremony for the next day, see if we can get some press conferences together to more detail these issues, and then have the main ceremony on Sunday at noon, the 14th.
Okay, and if people would like more information, do you have a phone number you can give out?
Yes. If people want more information, and they can call me before the 10th of June, you know, when I'll be leaving here, they can reach me at area code 805-822-3309. And I'd also like to leave, if I can, a couple of website addresses for people to check out the details of what I've been saying.
Okay.
One of them is the website for the Ocean Summit itself, and that's put on by the Consortium of Groups, the Oceans Fair, and that's www.mb, like Monterey Bay, ocean.org. You can become abreast of all the events in town that are happening around this. Also, to get more information on the zero-point energy technologies, you can check with the website for the Institute for New Energy, and that's www.padrak.com/IN, like Nancy E. And another website for free energy information and Bruce De Palma's experiments on rotation that led to that, you can check out www.depalma.com. Now, another real important one for the details of environmental crisis and also some quotes about the zero-point energy research, you should check out Adam Trombley's website at Project Earth. That's www.projecteearth.com. And on there is a qualitative analysis of some of these environmental problems that I've just been, mentioning. But there's also a really powerful new videotape that's come out about the zero-point energy technology. It's called Free Energy, the Race to Zero Point. And that can be accessed through an 800 number, which is 1-800-795-TAPE, T-A-P-E, 1-800-795-TAPE for the Free Energy Race Point video. And I've talked to the producer of the tape this morning, and they've said that if your listeners call them to order a tape and mention that they heard it on your radio station, they'll get a 10% discount.
All right. So you want to give that one out one more time?
Okay, that's the videotape. It's 1 hour and 10 minutes. It has quite a number of the most prominent inventors who are the farthest ahead with all the devices, and it shows them and the discussions of this whole thing. It's a real powerful thing to show folks, and it's called Free Energy, the Race to Zero Point. And the tape is accessible through 1-800-795-TAPE, T-A-P-E.
Okay, and tell them you heard it on San Francisco Liberation Radio, and you get a 10% discount.
That's right.
All right, David, we've been talking to David Williams of Global Emergency Alert Response, and I want to thank you for being with us today on San Francisco Liberation Radio, and literally, the fate of the Earth is in balance, so we want to urge people to get to Monterey June 11th through the 14th and participate in this prayer vigil.
Thank you very much.
David, thanks so much. Take care.